wanted the best, you've got the best podcast. The hottest podcast in the world. The Chris Voss Show, the preeminent podcast with guests so smart you may experience serious brain bleed. The CEOs, authors, thought leaders, visionaries, and motivators. Get ready. Strap yourself in. Keep your hands, arms, and legs inside the vehicle at all times, because you're about to go on a monster education roller coaster with your brain. Now, here's your host, Chris Voss.
Hi, folks. This is Voss here from thechrisvossshow.com. Wow, that just slipped all the notes for me, man. My ears went perked up when I heard that. Welcome to the big show, my family and friends. For 16 years, we've been bringing you thechrisvossshow.com, the podcast that brings all the smartest people to you, the CEOs, the billionaires, the White House presidential advisors, the Pulitzer Prize winners, the great authors who share all their journeys of life, their experience, and bring it all honed down to you in this beautiful distilled version we called the Chris Voss Show Glow. There's a cup of it I'm drinking right now. It's tasty. I had to accent the sip there. All I ask for you is to please share for the show to your family, friends, and relatives. It doesn't cost you a dime. And you know what? You'll get this satisfaction of glow that will come over you that will be like, I did something today because I wasn't working and just doing my remote work while I was in bed sleeping. So go to goodreads.com/Chris Voss, linkedin.com/Chris Voss, Chris Voss One on the TikTok, and Chris Voss Facebook.com. Another amazing author we have on the show. He's a multi-book author, I should say, as well. We have Corey Poirier on the show with us today. His newest book is coming out June 25th, 2024. You can pre-order it now, so you can be the first one on your block to read it. It's called The Enlightened Passenger, The Flight That Changes Everything. We're going to be talking to him about his amazing book, his insights, and everything that goes into it. Welcome to the show, Corey. How are you?
I am doing world class, as I mentioned off air. I'm having a fantastic day. I used to hear the joke all the time, if I was doing any better, I'd want to be me. And so that's kind of how I feel today.
There you go. If I was doing any better, I'd want to be me like 30 years ago. There you go. I had more energy back then. So you are a multiple-time TEDx speaker. You're a sought-after keynote speaker. You've spoken on Mo Mondays and PMX stages. You've shared a bill with everyone from John C. Maxwell to Deepak Chopra. I'm just being a shit. Stephen M. R. Covey. We've had both the kids on the show from Stephen Covey. To General Hillier. And has presented hundreds of thousands of attendees since he began his speaking journey. He's the host of the top-rated Conversations with Passions radio show, For the Love of Speaking show, and the founder of the speaking program, and been featured in multiple television specials, CBS, CTV, NBC, ABC, and any sort of three-letter BC there are, except for the FBI, maybe, I don't know. I'm just telling jokes at the end of the bio. Welcome to the show, Corey. Give us your .coms. How do you want people to find you on those interwebages in the sky?
Probably the best places, I would say, first and foremost, we have CoreyPoiriermedia.com. Mm-hmm. That's sort of my own website that I kind of use whenever people are reaching out to find out what I do. And then I also, the new site, it actually goes live tomorrow, is thisisthebook.com. This is the book.com. The book that we're talking about today, depending when somebody's listening, it's starting tomorrow is when you can get it through the website. But as of right now, people can literally buy it on, Barnes & Noble, Walmart, Target, all those places.
There you go. So you got a bunch of great places to, people can order up that book. And June 24. Can you believe we're almost halfway through the year when your book will come out? And I'm sure people are excited again. So give us a 30,000 overview of what's inside the book. People are going to find out.
Yeah. So the book itself is a fictional parable, but it's closer to probably a self-help book than maybe a novel or a fantasy book. Hmm. But essentially, similar to The Alchemist, or if people have heard of the Celestine Prophecy or Ogmandino's writing, It's basically a book where we explore this connection between these two people on a plane, strangers, didn't meet until this day, old man, young man sitting on the plane. He's kind of like, for lack of a better term, an arrogant business person who's like, pays for the seat next to him, doesn't want company, just wants to do his own thing, falls asleep, wakes up to the old man sitting next to him. The old man explains he was bumped because the flight was full. And now the young passenger's like, I'm going to go to sleep. I don't want anything to do with this, until he finds out the old man is wealthy. And then he wants to figure out how the old man got that way. He's a reluctant passenger because he finds out wealth isn't just money, and then he doesn't really want much part of that. He just wants to know how to get rich money-wise. But ultimately, the flight then becomes the journey of the older guy, him sharing his journey, and it's basically the 10 life lessons that he's learned during his journey. But what makes it really unique is it's actually kind of disguised as the 10 lessons I've learned during interviews with 7,500 of the world's top thought leaders.
There you go. So it's kind of a parable in a sort of way, story?
Yeah, that's exactly this parable.
There you go. And people really learn sometimes better through those than just, you know, some self-help book barking at you, you know, telling you, hey, do some goals, eh? And, you know, they like stories. Stories are the owner's manual life, as we would say here on the Chris Voss Show. So the enlightened passenger, is this on a Boeing flight? Are there any doors that fall off? No, I'm just kidding.
No, I know you're kidding, but the answer is no, because that could be a book now, and it could be a fictional book based on a real flight. But none of the doors fall off in this one, although there is some turbulence.
Turbulence. There you go. That is some heightened contention and drama. So tell us a little bit about your background and upbringing in your words. What got you here? How did you grow up? What were some of the things that influenced you and made you want to, you know, start writing books? How many books do you have, by the way, too?
Depends if you're talking books I've been involved with like co-author books and all that, or just my own. If we're talking my own that I've written start to finish, just three. But if we're talking everything, it's like 30.
So there you go. Wow. That's quite a bit. So tell us about your journey, sir.
Yeah, absolutely. So my background is I grew up in a small little town, so small that when I say it when I'm traveling, a lot of people haven't heard of it. It's called Summerside, and it's in Prince Edward Island in Canada, smallest province, and the smallest city in the smallest province is where I grew up. And so I was raised by a single mother. I tell people the other part to kind of my hero's journey is that I graduated high school with a 49 plus one in a class, meaning a teacher gave me a plus one. I didn't know the difference between fiction and nonfiction, which is kind of ironic now, writing books. I jokingly say, but it's true, I wouldn't have known what kind of book I wrote after this enlightened passenger, because I wouldn't have been able to say if it was fiction or nonfiction. And still to this day, how I remind myself is I say nonfiction. I think of fiction as, I always say, pixies and fairies and stuff. Yeah. So to me, nonfiction is not pixies and fairies. And I didn't read my first book till age 27. And I remember telling my mother at age 26 or 25, I wanted to write a book. And she said, I think you have to read a full book first to know how to write one. So that's kind of a bit about my backstory. The reason I bring up the single mother is because it really had a big impact in my life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we had the struggles that you would expect people have whenever there's only one income. And at the same time, you know, my journey was one of those where I wasn't certainly written about in the yearbook or anything saying likely to succeed. Mm-hmm. And so it's for me, it's fascinating now to look back and grow up in this tiny town and think that there wasn't much beyond the tiny town.
Yeah. It's those things shape you in life. How did that affect your relationships growing up with a single mother?
I think for me personally, it was actually for lack of a better way of saying positive or negative, I think it really, in a lot of ways, shaped exactly who I am today. For example, I think it kind of sounds weird, but I know that males and females have different strengths. Typically, you know, if you look in the workforce, females are better multitaskers usually, even though I know they say none of us should do it. But I tend to be a really good multitasker. And I think I got that from my mother. Like, she's a multitasker and I just naturally seem to evolve that way. I think another thing is that my mother, when I hit 16, kind of said, you used to live with us, we'll still cover your basics, but good luck with the rest. And as soon as I got a job, I had to go. I remember I got my first car. It was a $400 car. And I literally, at the time, didn't have the money to spend by the $400 car. So my grandfather co-signed the loan instead of just giving me the money, because he said, this will help you build your credit. So like at age 16, I was building credit. I was doing my laundry because my mom said, there's the pile. As soon as I got a car, it was like, and then a job, she's like, okay, I've done my part. And so I think that helped, because I'm not saying it wouldn't have happened the same way with a father, but I think it was, she was independent and grew up independent like that. She's an only child. I'm an only child. And so I think she just kind of went good luck and threw the handcuffs to me and said, figure out how to get them off.
There you go. Some of those things that you learned. My mom, you know, I had both my parents in the home, but my mom, somewhere around 10 or 12, she was tired of what was going on in the house with her income. And my father was struggling. He was a good man, but he had gone to college. And so my mom went off to school to become a teacher, and it was something she needed to do. But for the rest of us, we felt abandoned, and we had to do the laundry and learn to cook and learn to clean up after ourselves and stuff. And what's funny is I didn't like it at the time, and it seemed a little bit of abandonment. When I got into, you know, I started living with other guys in like college years and stuff like that, I found all these guys who didn't know how to wash their own clothes, didn't know how to cook their own food, didn't know how to do anything. And in fact, if anything, they would get with women just so that women would do those things for them because they didn't know how to do it. And I'm like, that's really sad that you have to choose. You have to choose to just give up and go find a woman who will babysit you because you can't do your own things. So there's something empowering about it, I think, in character building, maybe.
Yeah, and like to your point, yeah, I mean, that was my experience as well. Is I'll be honest, the one thing I didn't learn really how to do well is cook, but the rest of the stuff, yeah, I learned it quite well. And then ultimately, to your point, my friends, that like when I had roommates and stuff, none of them knew how to do that. And I didn't want to be the sole person doing it for three dudes in an apartment. So yeah, I would just say, you know, I'll do my own, you do your own. And then on the food side, because I didn't know how to cook, I went out and bought my own. But yeah, I didn't rely on others to do it, but it was fascinating. Because until you said it, I never really reflected on that. Mm-hmm. How many people, males I knew, that didn't know how to do those things. And to your point, how many I think actually did get in relationships hoping that would get done for them.
Yeah, yeah. And sometimes picking women they weren't that excited to be with, but they're just like, I don't know, she cooks for me and basically is my mom. And I'm just like, that's really fucking pathetic. So how do you become what you are today? You get into speaking, you get into writing books and doing all these things, advising other people.
Yeah. So how I got into it is I started in the corporate world. I spent almost 10 years doing what thou shall not ever do, which is sell photocopiers door to door for really big companies, but sell like going to companies, meaning I was selling them on behalf of really big companies. And I was going through the doors of businesses and companies to talk to them about why they need to replace the yellow photocopier in the corner with a white photocopier.
Oh, yeah.
And it's funny, I've had realtors in the past when I've done training, they'll say, what gives you the right to train me? I've been in real estate for whatever amount of years. And I said, I don't know if I have the right, but let me tell you my background. I sold photocopiers for 5 years. And before I got those words out, they'd be like, all right, that's all I need to know. And so I know it's not an easy business, but that's how I built it. So I learned the corporate world. I was in management. I was in sales, all that stuff. And then what happened for me is on the side, this is really a weird link between the two, but I got tricked into performing stand-up comedy one night.
Oh, wow. And
then I ended up, because of that, I learned about this thing over time called professional or public speaking. Mm-hmm. And somebody invited me to see a Tony Robbins event. And they said, can you believe how much he's getting paid to do this? And I said, well, how much is that? They told me it was like a record scratch moment. And I'm like, wait a minute, I'm paying like 10 bucks in gas to drive all the comics to the club, get $5 from the door. And this guy's speaking in the daytime with no hecklers, no alcohol involved. And he's getting paid real money to do it. I want to know more about that. And that was actually the catalyst for me, at least starting down the journey of being a speaker.
Wow. There you go. And so was there anything that motivated you that? Was it the money or was it just the money?
You know what? I think it, so I'll say it. I don't know how much I really knew it at the time, mm-hmm, but I believe it was the impact that I could create. And I feel like I got a sense of that in comedy. It sounds strange, but you think like stand-up comedy, how could that be about impact? Isn't that just to make people laugh? But the question is, what does that audience get out of laughing? And what I mean by that is I didn't realize it until later, but even when I was bombing, as we call it in comedy, like getting no laughs, yeah, people were laughing at me as a train wreck. And what I found is when you're laughing like that and you're focused on that, you're not thinking about all the crap going on in your life at home or happened that day.
Yeah.
And so to me, I realized later as I was creating an impact, for better or worse, on my best shows, my worst shows, what have you. I mean, obviously, it goes to a whole nother level when you're Kevin Hart or somebody who's got people for 2 hours and have them, you're forgetting about your life for 2 hours. That's a different thing. When I was starting, it was like a 5 minute set. When I finished, I finally had 45 minutes that I could do my own show. But it was like, it took a long time to get there. And I didn't recognize until about a year or two in that what I was doing was helping people escape their day. And so by unknowing that that's what I was doing, but getting the benefit of that, I really believe I went into speaking wanting to do that without realizing that's what it was about. I don't think I was ever motivated by money, other than the fact that I needed to put food on the table, meaning yeah, I knew I couldn't just do it for free. And I knew I had to start charging quickly, but I don't think it was the big driver. I think the big driver for me was impact. And I guess the other side is knowing that I was creating a legacy, like knowing that even if I'm not alive to see it, indirectly, somebody someday is benefiting from something I taught somebody else.
There you go. That's the great thing about speaking and writing books. You'll touch people that they may never, you know, you may never hear from them or meet them. Remember when I was finishing mine, I was pretty frustrated. It was in the editing phase. And I was at the point where you're just like, you know, fuck all this and just throw it all away. And I'm going to do something else. I don't really care about this anymore. And my friends who are authors were all like, no, this, if you're feeling that right now, you're at that point, that means you're almost there. You just got to push through. You'll be fine. You're like right there. And I'm like, fuck you guys.
Still do the book?
Yeah. Still do the book. But somebody wrote me, I think I was joking and complaining about how I kind of felt like I was in the shining moment of all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy. I felt like I was typing that at that point in editing. And I just was frustrated by how I knew it was going to be hard, but I didn't realize how hard it was going to be, you know, where they just take and throw out, you know, your little baby you've been building. And someone pulled me aside and they said, hey man, I'm a multi-book author. You know, it helps to have authors on the show. And I think I was complaining to one of them. And they said, dude, there's going to be somebody out there that needs to hear the words you're going to tell them. And they need it now. And they need it desperately. And the only person who's going to be able to get through them is you and your story or whatever your message is. And you've got to realize that person's out there. And if you can't do it for yourself, you got to do it for them. And that was really powerful. I was like, wow, I never really thought about that. That's true. There's been times where we tweeted stuff that people wrote back to us and said that they were thinking about committing suicide that day. And they decided not to because of whatever sort of positivity we put out there in the world. And we didn't even really think that it would probably save some people from committing suicide. And then someone else wrote me, or someone else I talked to, that was another author on the show. They talked about how they were at a book signing and a gal came up and told her that when she was in prison, her books were the things that gave them hope and kept them going and made them want to not recidivate and improve the quality of their lives. And they actually had a book club of the women in the prison that were doing it. And so what she does is on her desk when she's writing, she keeps a picture of that woman in an orange jumpsuit that she sent her. And yeah, you just never know how much impact you're going to have in people's lives with everything you do. So great legacy.
Yeah, I mean, it's to your point, I remember a client that I worked with for a while told me he was a big Twitter influencer, and same thing. He actually showed me, he told me, and then he showed me same thing, a couple of different tweets over the years that he kept that people said that one quote that you shared today made the difference. I was about to throw in the towel. And you just never know. Like I've had, and this is part of that legacy, but it's an invisible impact because if it doesn't get to me, that's fine. But you know, I'm still every day trying to at least create something positive for the world. But I've had those moments where somebody sent a message, and I'll tell you how I use it too, is that I had somebody send a message one time and said, you might not remember this, but you spoke at my school years ago. And that started making me feel old because I'm like, at the time I was probably like 35. And I'm like, it made seem like I was like 70 when you spoke at my school years ago. But she said, and you gave me the butt kick in the butt I needed to go back or to finish school and then to go to college. And she said, now I'm the manager of 5 rental car companies and wow. I'm doing well in my life. And so all through the years, we have a bunch of those. And what I would do is people always ask me, what do you do before you get on stage to overcome the fear? And I mean, that's a whole probably different conversation, but I will say one of the things that I do now, I used to meditate for 10 minutes, but then I found that didn't work because you're at the table usually with the meeting planner and the other head office people. And then you go meditate and then they started to get panicky. Like, did he leave? Did he just jump in the car and drive? So I realized I couldn't do stuff like that. So I said, I have to do something really quick before I get on the stage, just to give me the right mindset to jump into the talk. And so what I do now is I think about that quote by her, or I have probably about 35, 40, I siphoned through. And there's this lady that I knew her personally. And in a nutshell, she was on social services and her dream was to get into the hair business. And, you know, now she has a successful career in the hair business. And so I think about people like that before I get on stage. And then I say, this is who I'm doing it for. That next one of those people that are in the audience that I don't know is in the audience. And so, yeah, it really is powerful. But if you have 50 or 60 or 70 of those comments in 5 or 10 years, you have to wonder how many lives you're impacting without ever knowing.
That's true. That's true. And or after you pass, how many people you impact. I think that was one of the things I really was excited about when I published my book was, this is like, I just made something that's eternal that will live on, at least as long as Amazon lives.
Yeah,
exactly. So there you go. But it's in the history books. Plus, I never have to remember any of the crap that's in it anymore, because it's in, when people ask me about my life stories, I just go, read the stupid book, will you? I got better things to do. I'm making new life stories. So the Enlightened Passenger, the flight that changes everything, what gave you the idea or proponent to design it this way, to use the subject matter, you know, a flight, a passenger? What gave you the idea to present it in that way?
There was a question that I asked often in interviews, and I'll share kind of how it came about, but I hesitate often to share the question because it kind of reveals a lot of details, gives away stuff. But there was this question that I was asking often, and the idea planted in my head of, what if I turned this concept into a book? And then as far as the why it was on a flight, for example, could have been on a train, it could have been in a car, two people driving. It's because I'm on a flight so often. Like, I travel so much by plane. I think I was fascinated by the idea of having that random conversation on a plane with a random stranger. And you could have that in a train. In a car, it's a little different, unless it was a carpool. But you could have it on a train, but there's not as many trains anymore. So I felt like that everybody could relate to the idea of somebody talking to them on a plane, that they're like, oh, I don't really want to hear this. And then it turns into a stimulating conversation that maybe has an impact on their life. Mm. And by the way, I said to people, interestingly enough, the two characters in the book are basically both me. It's like, I'm a Gemini, so it's each side of my character. Okay. And the younger one, the guy that's like, I'd just rather go to sleep than talk to this person next to me. If I'm being transparent, which a lot of us don't like being when it comes to something like this, I'm that guy. I would rather just go to sleep. I'd rather just work on my laptop. I'm not like that's awesome, and get into a big conversation, which sounds strange as a speaker, as a person that hosts shows, interviews people all the time. But I put so much out there of myself that I find that's the time when I'm like, I can get a lot done, or I can get some sleep. And so every now and then I'll have to remind myself, you know, this person here next to me, maybe I can help their day or something. And so that's kind of where that part of it came from, is that I'm the reluctant person that doesn't want a passenger next to me. And my friend says, thank the seat gods or the seat universe or whatever you want to call it, whenever you get an empty seat next to you. Hmm. And I'll be honest, I still do that. I still would rather be sitting next to myself, like on the seats on that row by myself. But I also know the impact you can have, or somebody else can have on you. And so again, this is a scenario where the flight changes everything for one of the two passengers, probably for both of them. But really, the idea was like me talking about what I learned over the years with all these interviews, sharing it from the both perspectives of who I am, and then doing it on a flight, because that's the one where I think it's most relatable to people. And it's the place where I've had those scenarios. And I will say, because I didn't really fully mention this, but when I said like, it's from my interviews, an example would be and I'm going by memory on this, but on the flight, because you talked about edits and rewrites, and we've changed it a few times, so I'm trying to remember which is the one that made it to the world. But he talks about how the character talks about how he was about to go on stage, and he was backstage in the green room with Les Brown, the legendary speaker. Yeah. And he said to Les, they got talking about synchronicity, and Les said, well, to me, synchronicity is God's way of staying anonymous. And so that was what Les said as a response. Whenever I interviewed Les the last time, I was sitting in his living room in Atlanta, and those are the words Les said to me. Huh. So what I'm saying is there's some fiction mixed in with the nonfiction.
Ah, there you go. There you go. So then those make the greatest parables. I mean, there's a truism to the reality of life, but fiction is a great way to tell a story that helps people learn it better. It kind of sneaks up on them and gets to them, as opposed to just coming at them. Like, you know, like when you read a business book, it's just kind of barking at you the whole time, going, do this, stop doing that, knock it off, bye.
In your point, I'd say it's almost like tricking somebody into learning. But at the same time, the idea with this too is that I hope somebody reads it as the passenger without realizing they're the passenger. You know, so if you're that younger person that's like, I don't need to learn all this stuff, and then you're reading it, the hope is, like you said, it's like it's talking to the young pastor, so you don't feel like it's barking at you. Mm-hmm. But maybe you go, you know what, though? Even if you don't realize it consciously, but that is me. I need to learn this stuff. So that's kind of, I think that's how it sort of ease its way in, versus, like you say, barking at you or banging you over the head with it.
There you go. So let's talk about some of the other things you do and offer on your website. I know you have your book, The Book of Why and How, is something that you talk about on your website. I think you've got multiple websites. So I've got I've got your that speaker guy up, and then there's the CoreyPoriermedia.com. What are some of the other things you do? I imagine speaking. Do you do coaching, things like that?
So I do. I speak at events, but that's been slowed down since we launched a brand that we have now called Blue Talks.
Okay.
It's BLU, which stands for Business Life Universe. And I kind of jokingly said the best way to describe it is if TED Talks and Chicken Soup for the Soul got married and had a baby on the honeymoon, we'd be the baby that crawled back. Uh-huh. So we're kind of a merge between the two. And what we do ultimately is we bring our events, just like TEDx, to various venues. We have, for example, next week we're at Columbia University, and 2 weeks after that we're at the University of Miami. And basically we run events, we feature speakers, interviews, like live interviews. We do books, the anthologies. And so we've done, I think, 14 now. We're at 14. And we get big name thought leaders usually to write the foreword for us. The books usually become Barnes & Noble and Amazon bestsellers. We have a podcast and a virtual stage. So all of that with Blue Talks, and basically that's helping other people get their expertise to the world. And then we also have an experts bureau, which is kind of like a mixture between a speakers bureau and a PR firm, where we go and help other people get media. And so I spend a lot of my time on that now, so much so that the speaking is slowed right down. So not doing as much speaking, but doing more of that. At the same time, everything I do, and I don't think this is a positive or a negative, is just my, you know, what works best for me. But I don't do one-on-one coaching. I do what we usually call in the business more one-to-many, you know, where I'm working with. If I was doing any kind of coaching, it would be like a group of 20 people. For me personally, it's funny because I think a lot of people think the reason somebody will do that, like it's speaking for audiences instead of, say, coaching one-on-one, a lot of people would think it's for the money because of the fact that if you're by the hour, you can only have so many hours, and then you're knocked. If you have 20 hours or 30 hours you can book a week, once you hit them, you've hit your ceiling.
It just charge people more.
Yeah. That's and I mean, Brendan Burchard, I just watched him do a talk at the HEOS conference, and he said he works with like 4 billionaires, and he said, each pays me millions a year. That's the trick. And he's got lots of other time still besides that. But for me, starting early on, my challenge was I want to have a lot of adventures. And I found when I first started and I was trying to one-on-one coaching and you're by the hour, it's hard to have the adventures I want to have because you can't be spontaneous because of the fact that you have, let's say, 30 bookings this week. And again, next week, 30 bookings. And the next week, 30 bookings. And so how do you do those? Or do you end up doing them while you're traveling, which is not fun for either you or the person you're coaching? So I just made a decision early on that my business model was going to be one-to-many and also in a way that I could do it as I need it versus me working around specific hours that were already set.
There you go. You got it down. Now, is the best place for Blue the site CoreyPoriermedia.com?
It could be a site, but we also have, not to confuse people even more, but we also have BlueTalks.com as well.
Okay, so let me pull that up so I can take a look at some of that. I see some of the Blue stuff. So it's BLUtalks.com.
Yeah. Now, that's a static site, Chris. It's not like it's not dynamic. There's not like newer stuff always on there.
Okay.
It's pretty much here's what Blue Talks does. For people, if they Google Blue Talks, we're all over the place now. Mm-hmm. You know, we're 4 years in or 4.5 years, and it's like the first bunch of pages on Google. You know, it helps when you have all these speakers you're featuring because they're tagging you in and all that. Yeah, that's, I mean, like I say, that's where I'm spending a lot of my time. And then the extension of that is helping other people become, now I'll say influencers, but I use that term loosely because I think there's multiple ways you can view influencers, just like gurus or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And also the same way with experts, because I look at it like we're helping people become experts in the eyes of their clients, but they still have to do the work. You know, I don't want somebody that says they're the world's top life coach who started a week ago, and we're trying to make them look like they're the go-to person over everybody that's been doing it for 20 years. That's not what it's about. But if we work with somebody who is a real expert in their space, I don't want them to be the world's best kept secret anymore. So we're helping them not become a best kept secret.
That's good. There's a lot of differential in the spectrum of coaches. I mean, I've seen a lot of coaches that I thought were really great, and they seemed like they were really hustling, and they put up a lot of flack that they were hustling, a lot of PR that they were hustling, and I have multi-million-dollar clients and stuff. And then I've seen two of them just boldfacedly admit that for years they've been living out of their car in the back of a 7-Eleven with their family. And I'm just like, what the fuck? So, you know, yeah, we do need to make sure that the coaches that are really successful do the thing. We try to weed those out in our platforming as well.
Not to interject, but I was going to say, that's my biggest rant. My wife will tell you, my pet peeve and my rant is people positioning themselves that you was using a Facebook ad as an example and standing yeah. beside a Rolls Royce and saying, mm-hmm. let me show you how to get this Rolls Royce and get this $1 million that they've never had. And yeah. the Rolls Royce, I always say it's a filtered life because we don't see when the person comes out of the house and says, stop standing in front of my car. You know, yeah. it's we don't see that side. So yeah, I think we need more authenticity, but at the same time, I get why people are doing it. They're thinking this is my way to make a living. But to me, if that's the case, then get to page one and then teach people how to start the book, or get to page chapter two and teach people chapter one. But don't yeah. go to the end of the book and then say, I'll teach you how to do the whole book.
Yeah, especially if you don't live the book, if you can't live the book, yeah. you're teaching other people how to live the book. I see that a lot of dating coaches too. They can't get a second date or even have anybody sleep with them, and yet they're teaching people how to date, or they think they are. Let's put it that way. So it's a weird world. So final thoughts as we go out on your book, encouraging people to pick it up, et cetera, anything we may have not touched on or covered so far?
I guess the life lessons that are in the book or the lessons that people can use, just to give people kind of even a feel. I know we've teased the book a lot, but you know, it gets pretty, like it goes down to what it took me thousands and thousands of hours with all these interviews to learn. So I want people to understand the gravity of this, in the sense that I tried to distill it down to the 10 lessons I'd want my kids to know. That's how important this was to me. Mm-hmm. And so to give people an example of what kind of stuff they might see in there, one of them, I talk about having a personal mission statement. You know, and how all companies, like all top companies, they have a personal mission, or they have a mission statement, whether their employees know it or not, they have one, and they've trained them how to work within it. So for example, Disney, whether a person likes them or not, Disney has this mission statement that says to make everybody, especially children, happy. And what they've realized is adults are children too at Disney. Yeah. And they also, the happy part is they have systems built in. So you walk away having a good memory. So if you drop the ice cream, they know that any employee can pick it up. Or in my case, I lost my rental car at Disney in the parking lot, which sounds yeah. foolish. I should never admit yeah. that. But I went out to the parking lot. Disney has a system for how to find your car within 10,000 cars. And it's amazing.
Really?
Yeah. So I'll tell you the system is simple too. Yes. It's you just need to know roughly when you parked. So what they do is they basically park people by different times and sections, and they keep track of that. And so if you are at Fantasia Mickey section, you go up to the girl that's, and there's always a person in the parking lot, and say, I lost my car. She'll go, what time did you get here? I said 11:30. In my case, she goes, Adam, what cars were you parking between 11:15 and 11:45? He says, Fantasia Mickey. She goes, your car's up there, sir. She pointed in the direction. I went up, clicked my thing, found my car.
They've been doing that since I was a kid, like 10 years old, 8 years old. Since the time I went, yeah, since the time I went to Disneyland as a kid, they would do that. They would section off the parking, and you would be like in that certain section. And that was like, it was like 50 years ago.
The idea is you're supposed to remember which section you're in, but I didn't look because I was there for the first time, and
still,
I was
like, that's brilliant.
Yeah, and so, but that ties into their having a mission statement, right? Yeah. And so it's the same idea. What I'm getting at is, if every company, all these top companies have a mission statement, shouldn't we kind of, for lack of a cheesy way of saying it, shouldn't we be the CEOs of our own life? Shouldn't that be important? And so for me, it's in the book, we talk about how to write one, but why you should have one. And one other quick example is another thing that I've learned with all these interviews is almost all of us in general say yes to everything and then try to figure out how to manage it all. Whereas what I've noticed is these influencers, top achievers, they say no to almost everything that won't move the needle, to say yes to the few things that will. And so what I've discovered is they say no 20 to 50 times more than everybody else.
Huh.
But I grew up saying yes. So to me, it's now just telling you that in the book, we also talk about how to work the muscle to start saying no and how to do it without burning bridges. But what I'm saying is, if most of the people that you're trying to become are doing this, maybe it's worth looking into. So that's kind of the premise behind what we teach in the book.
There you go. That sounds awesome, man. That sounds completely awesome. So thank you for coming on the show. Give us your .coms wherever you want people to find you on the interwebs.
Yeah. So honestly, if people are, you can order the book right now on most of the major retailers, but if people are keen on getting some free bonuses, because we are offering free bonuses through our website, if people go that route, it's going to be live tomorrow. I wish I could say it is right now. Theoretically, a lot of people listening in Evergreen, as we call it in podcast, will hear this and it'll be up anyway. But if you go to thisisthebook.com, the benefit of going through there is that basically you go buy it, you go put in your order number, and then you get 5 cool bonuses that you wouldn't get if you just bought it off the website. So
there you go.
That's probably the one I would leave people with, because as you know, after doing this for a lot of years, if you give people five domains at once, they probably only, they might not get to any, or they might get to two. And so I'd rather give them the one I'd like people to go to. So this is thebook.com. But if you can't wait, you know, feel free to go over to Amazon or any of the other, Walmart or what have you.
There you go. I think you'll be fine, because we usually publish these two or three days out. So by then you should be up and going, hopefully. So there you go. Thank you very much, Corey, for coming on the show. This has been fun and insightful interview.
Absolutely. My absolute pleasure. Thank you so much, Chris.
Thank you. And order of the book, folks, wherever fine books are sold, you can pre-order today so you get the first one, you get your hands on it. June 25th, 2024 comes out. The Enlightened Passenger, the flight that changes everything, and hopefully, it's not in the title, but hopefully it will change your life. Thanks to my audience for coming by. Go to goodreads.com for Chess Chris Voss, LinkedIn.com for Chess Chris Voss, Chris Voss, one of the TikTokity and all those crazy places on the internet. Thanks for tuning in. Be good to each other or else. No, I'm just kidding. See you next time.